Hi there, we really hope you enjoy this teaching from the Message Trust. To find out more about all the exciting things we're doing, check out our website, message.org.uk.
Just reading from Luke chapter 4 and verse 14. Jesus returned to Galilee with the power of the Spirit. News about him spread everywhere. He taught in the Jewish meeting places and everyone praised him. Jesus went back to Nazareth where he'd been brought up and as usual he went to the meeting place on the Sabbath when he stood up to read the scriptures. He's given the book of Isaiah the prophet. He opened it and read, "The Lord's Spirit has come to me because he has chosen me to tell good news to the poor. The Lord sent me to announce freedom for the prisoners, to give sight to the blind and free everyone who suffers, and to say, this is the Lord, the year the Lord has chosen, the year of Jubilee." Jesus closed the book. He handed it back to the man in charge, sat down. Everyone in the meeting place looked straight at him. And Jesus said to them, "What you have just heard me read has come true today." All the people started talking about Jesus. They were amazed at the wonderful things he said. They kept on asking, "Isn't this Joseph's son?" Jesus answered, "You will certainly want to tell me this saying, 'Doctor, first make yourself well.' You will tell me to do the same things here in my hometown that you heard I did in Capernaum. But you can be sure that no prophets are liked by the people of their own hometown. During the time of Elijah, there was no rain for 3.5 years. Everywhere people were starving. There were many widows in Israel, but Elijah was sent only to a widow in the town of Zarephath near the city of Sidon. During the time of the prophecy, Elisha, many men in Israel had leprosy, but no one was healed except Naaman, who was in Syria." When the people in the meeting place heard Jesus say this, they became so angry. They got up and they threw him out of the town. They dragged him to the edge of the cliff on which the town was built because they wanted to throw him down from there. But Jesus slipped through the crowd and got away. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation like Jesus when things are going really quite well and then they sort of fall off, go really badly. I find myself in these situations all the time, to be honest. It happened to me about 4 weeks ago when I was cutting the grass. Not my own grass, but the grass outside my house. We live in Withenshaw, part of the estate on the Brooklyn side, and there's this bit of grass out, quite a huge bit of grass actually, and the council do not cut this well. And I moan about it. I've moaned about it for 2 or 3 years now. I've gone on and on about how badly they cut this grass. And suddenly I thought to myself, stop moaning, go and cut the grass yourself. So I'm out there, I'm cutting the grass. A third of the way through, I am beginning to regret the fact that I ever started cutting the grass. I've only got a little lawnmower, and it's a big bit of grass. Now, unbeknown to me, my wife, who did not ask permission to do this, had prayed in the morning that we would make better connections with our neighbours. We knew all the neighbours just around us, but we didn't know, you know, wider in the estate. And this was her heart, you see. So she prayed this prayer, unbeknown to me, without any permission or anything like that. So I'm cutting the grass, third of the way through, regretting cutting the grass, and Dave comes out. Never met Dave in my life. Big bloke. In fact, he's known as Big Dave to his friends. To his family, he's known as Fat Dave. Anyway. Big gloat. And he goes, "Oh, I like it when people take a pride in the area. I'll give you a hand." I thought, that's nice, isn't it? And to be honest, it was a godsend. It wasn't quite the angel I was expecting, but he was a godsend. And so he gave me a hand and raked, and we did it. And about an hour and a half later, blinking neck, took ages. And we did it. And Leslie comes out, and my wife, and she says, "Dave, why don't you come round for a drink?" You see, she sees this as an answer to prayer, obviously. Make more connection with the neighbours, yeah? So he says, "I'd like that very much. Can I bring my ex-wife?" It's not a question you're often asked, is it? I said, "Yeah, you can bring your ex-wife." Dave has a number of ex-wives. And he said, can I bring my daughter? So I said, "Yeah. Yeah, that's great." Dave has a number of children by ex-wives. In fact, I think he's fathered most of the estate, Dave. His daughter's 40. I think he's only about 53, but anyway, whatever. And So we're sitting in, so I've got the daughter, the ex-wife, Dave, and their three dogs they brought around as well. Okay. My wife thinks this is a huge answer to prayer. I'm beginning to feel slightly uneasy about this. Particularly as I say to Dave, you know, you're working at the moment? No, I used to. I've had a load of jobs. I'm doing a bit down the pub at the moment, but ever since I got out of Strange Ways, you know. So I'm in my garden with Dave and his ex-wife, soon to be my ex-wife, actually, when you hear the end of this story. And to be honest, you know, it's good. You know, it's isn't that what we're there for? That's what we're there for. Things are going quite well, actually, to be honest. My grass is cut and I've made more contact with the neighbours. It's brilliant. It's good. Then things begin to descend very quickly because his daughter says the words, "I've got an allotment just round the corner." I have never wanted an allotment in my life. Allotments mean work, okay? Hard work. I never wanted that in my life. I've got enough hard work. We've got a garden, we've got everything, da da da. I've never wanted an allotment. So the warning bells go on. I say to her, "I hear it's quite hard to get an allotment." I thought I sowed some seeds of doubt, basically. And she said these words. She said, it is actually, because you've got to go on the council website, you've got to fill in a form, you've got to wait for ages, and there's a waiting list and everything. So I'm heartened. So she said, "Would you like to come and see it?" I was thinking, we'll go and see it. So Leslie, my wife, said, "Oh, yeah, that'd be wonderful." So we go around to see the allotment with Dave, his ex-wife, the two dogs, three dogs, daughter, and we meet Lee on the allotments. I didn't know these allotments actually existed. They're just around the corner from me. And the allotments are full of people. Seriously, all the community are out in these allotments. And there are allotments, and they got chicken sheds. Not allowed chicken sheds, but do you remember the lorry that turned over on the M62 with all the chickens, yeah? There was a great increase of chickens on our allotments because they all got in their cars and just went to get the chickens. All these scrawny, poor little chickens who were on the way to the abattoir have been saved. Anyway, they are on our allotment. And it's just full of people, kids everywhere, you know, community and so on. So my wife's thinking, this is an answer to prayer. I didn't even know she prayed this. So we meet Lee, he's head of the allotments. And I said, "Hello, Lee, I hear it's very hard to get an allotment." Just, you know, seeds of doubt there. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, it's actually, you've got to go on the council website, you've got to fill in a form, you've got to wait." He said, "But I can't be bothered, you can have that one." My wife goes, "Oh, thank you very much." I'm thinking, what? So I've got to leave early today. I'm down the allotment. When Jesus came to Nazareth, he's the boy made good, really, isn't he? He's come back. His family are there. His mum, brothers, family member, cousins. He's made a bit of a name for himself. Comes back to the hometown. He stands up in the synagogue. He engages in the synagogue service, the private prayer, the confession of the Jewish faith, the prayers, the scriptures. We're not quite sure whether he chose Isaiah 61 or whether it was given to him, or whatever. He speaks it out. Then, of course, the rabbi would sit down, and then the teaching would begin, and the teaching begins. And Jesus says today, "This has been fulfilled in your hearing." And he says these words, "To anoint, I've been sent to anoint, to preach good news to the poor. The people most in need of divine help. That's why I've come. To release the prisoners. To release the prisoners." Fantastic, the stuff you guys are doing with MEC and other stuff and your prison work. You're right in the heart of this prayer, aren't you? Recovery of sight to the blind. Those who are discriminated against in life and those who are spiritually blind as well. To let the oppressed go free, those sat on and pushed down by others. To proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, the declaration of Jubilee, as a special year every 50 years when all forget debts are forgiven, everyone returns to their ancestral home, so the inequalities of the land are redistributed. Freedom of slaves, justice is restored, everyone benefits. We have no knowledge that this ever happened in the heart of Israel at the time. But it was always the dream, the year of Jubilee, that one day somebody would come and release me from my debts and set everything as it should be set. And he sits down and they roll up the scroll and he says, today this scripture has been fulfilled in your presence. And it was going very well because everyone spoke well of him. But there's a bit of an undercurrent. Did you pick it up in the verse which said, some people said, isn't this Joseph's son? Now that could have been, oh, isn't it great? Joseph's boy's here. But there also could have been a bit of an undercurrent because there was a whole thing about his birth, wasn't there? Was it legitimate? You know, where did he come from? It was all a bit hazy, that birth bit. Is this Joseph's son? Oh, yeah, bit illegitimate. And then Jesus seems to kind of sense the undercurrent, questioning and caution, and he exposes a bit of jealousy in them. And he said, you know, you say that miracles should be done in the home place, but a prophet is without honor in their own place. He exposes a bit of lack of faith in them, actually, you know, because they're saying, go on, prove yourself, do some miracles. So there's interest in him, but there's not really a welcome to him, you see. So it's going well, and things are not quite as well as they should be, but then it seriously goes downhill. And the reason why it goes downhill are because of two stories that he told. One is to do with Elijah, who goes to a starving widow in a pagan land after he has been proclaimed judgment by the king, by prophesying a famine over the whole land. Elijah proclaims a famine. It's a direct challenge to the king himself, by the way. He's in power struggle with his wife, Queen Jezebel, who comes from Sidon. And Elijah is told to go to Sidon to find a Gentile woman who should never be accepted in the Jewish faith anyway and go and bless her. And then, even more so, Elisha is told to go and pray for the greatest enemy that Israel is facing at the time because he's not very well. It's a bit like an email coming through from the head of ISIS at the moment to one of you to say, oh, the leader's not very well. Would you go and pray for him? That's what it's like. One of your major enemies, not very well. Would you go and pray for him? And because he says these words, they were filled with rage, utter rage. He's preaching love to your enemy, firstly, of course, in the context of Rome and the occupation, brutal, all-consuming power. There was a strong move at the time for the Pharisees to be, you know, they were saying to the people, you've got to resist this force, this Roman force. And Jesus is speaking love to your enemies? How could you be so gracious to your enemies? He's preaching love to a pagan woman and a Gentile leprous man. They wanted to keep themselves separate. Keep yourselves pure, keep yourselves away from those kind of people. This is all about holiness and unholiness, you see. Let me just illustrate it with you in regard to food laws. Of the 341 rabbinical laws, 229 of them were to do with who you ate with and who you didn't eat with. I don't know if you know this. Cleanliness, food preparation. It was a way probably of controlling their own private lives. Because under the Roman occupation, they had very little control, but they could control who they ate with, yes? So there was a whole, you know, so if you were really holy, you would eat with the people who are really holy. You'd welcome them in. You'd have to keep these rules. It's a powerful way to socially exclude people. There was actually a list. There was a list on the door, a bit like a bouncer standing on the door. And basically, you couldn't get in if you had certain professions because you were unholy. I don't know if we've got any here. Any shepherds or farmers? Anyone who's been a shepherd or a farmer? Fantastic. Could you stand, please, sir? Thank you so much. Thank you. No, you can't come in. Sorry. But just stay there. Thank you. You're excluded. Thank you. It's going to be very affirming, this bit. Shopkeepers. Anyone done any shopkeeping? Worked in retail? Could you stand, please? Thank you so much. Fantastic. No, you're not coming in either. You're despised. Do we have anyone who works in the health service, doctors or nurses or folk? Thank you very much. Yep, you're despised. Anyone, butchers? Anyone done any butchering? Yeah, good. Put up your hand. Yeah. You cooked. That's good. Cleaners. Anyone cleaned for a living? Anyone clean their homes? No, clean for a living. Thank you. Great. You're despised. Hairdressers. Do we have any hairdressers here? Fantastic. No, you're not welcome either. Do we have any bloodletters? bloodletters, university course, bloodletting, no. Tanners, gamblers. This is going to be a good one. lottery ticket. Come on, you got to stand up. No, you're not going to do it, are you? Anyone work for the tax office? Tax collectors. Fantastic. That was the list of professions. Please stay standing. Then there was a list of other people. Adulterers, prostitutes, or idolaters. If you just... Fantastic. Do we have any supporters of Manchester City, Arsenal, Chelsea, or Liverpool here? Fantastic. Please stand up. You're not actually technically on the list, but you should be. And all Jewish people here who don't keep the laws to the fullest extent. Have any Jewish people here who don't keep the laws? Probably not. Any Gentiles, people who are not Jewish, could you stand if you did? Not one of you, not one of us in the culture of that day would have been able to come in to what they described as holiness. You would have been despised, outcast, untouchable. In fact, if somebody touched you, they'd have to go through a whole ceremony to make themselves clean. You are unholy. That's how they viewed you. That's how they viewed you. It was a private dining room, and you didn't have access. Could you please be seated? Thank you. But Jesus came and said these very gracious words. As in the days of Elijah and Elisha, God's grace is for everyone. He doesn't open up a private dining room, you see, in the food court of life. It's not one of the Pizza Hut on the side at the Trafford Centre. When he opens up his table, he stands in the middle of the food court of the Trafford Centre. He puts some tables together, he puts a white cloth upon it, and he puts the food on it, and he stands on a chair, and he shouts out at the top of his voice, "If anyone is hungry, if anyone is thirsty, come and eat with me. Come and eat with me." And people around are looking, saying, "Oh, I don't think I can do it. Oh, come on, my life's not put together. Come on. I'm not even worthy to come into this table. Come and sit at my table. Come and sit. I need to get my life sorted out." No, you don't. You come and sit at my table and we'll sort it out together. This is the call of grace. This is the call of grace. Come and eat with me. Holiness is not something to be defended. And this is one of the mistakes of the Church of God, that somehow we thought we had to defend holiness. We had to kind of, you know, get a barrier around it. We had to build a wall around holiness. So it's them and us and them. And you're either in or out. Brothers and sisters, Jesus did not come to defend holiness. He came to unleash it upon this world. So when he goes out into the crowds and a woman touches him, who is unholy because she has been bleeding for 12 years, he's on the way, of course, to heal a young daughter of the synagogue leader who is of the age of 12, by the way, interestingly. So for 12 years, this daughter has been alive and is now dying. And for 12 years, this woman has not been able to enter the synagogue because she's been bleeding for 12 years, you see. So when she touches him, that was just horrendous. I mean, he would have to go through a whole series of cleanliness rituals because he had been touched by an unclean person. But what happened? Did he become unclean or did she become holy? When you touch Jesus, you see, that's what happens, isn't it? When you touch Jesus. Oh, that we would grow a church with this heart. So whoever you are, come to the table and eat. That's what today's about. Whether you're a sinner, a failed, abused, particularly if you are a sinner, a failed, and have been abused or abused others or hate yourself, either you have been disloyal, whether you're bankrupt, whether you're in debt, whether you're sexually impure, whether you're an addict, I don't care. The table is for you. The table is for you because that's what God does. He opens up his arms to us and he says, come and eat and drink. We're to be the people who are used by God to bring holiness into this world, to see the unclean made clean, the outcast brought in, the sinners forgiven, the poor find justice. We're the people of Jubilee who declare your debts are forgiven. God's grace is for everyone, even the Daily Mail's list of the most repugnant. Martin Luther King made a call for extreme love. That was his call. I want extreme love to the loveless and the unlovable, to the immigrant and the Pole or the Bangladeshi or the sponging asylum seeker, as they call them, or the teenage prostitute or the rent boy. And what about the person who actually abuses the kids? Are they beyond God's grace and love? No. They have to sit at the table because holiness is coming and change is coming. The table is open for the Palestinian and the disenfranchised Muslim and the Shia Iraqi and even the ISIS executioner. I don't understand this grace. I certainly don't understand why it found me. But that's the thing about grace. And it's actually quite shocking. And that's why they wanted to throw him off a cliff. Because this kind of grace makes people angry. Really makes them angry. We want to bomb them and shoot them and exclude them. And Jesus, with his arms open wide to this world, says, come to me. Come, all of you. What about the neighbor who makes your life hell? What about the boss at work as a bully? What about the woman in church you can't abide? Or the person on your team who find it difficult? What about that? What about the grace to have for each other? When you're thrown together to work in mission, it's great, isn't it? Well, it is good for the first few days. But then suddenly you find out people are not as perfect as you are. And they have a lot to learn. I remember being in a missions thing when I was your age, and in YWAM, we did a big mission in Barcelona, and there's this one guy I could not stand on the course, seriously. God, he just, oh. Anyway, the communion service, and we were encouraged to take communion to somebody we needed to ask forgiveness for. And I thought, I've got to do it. You know when your heart's beating, you say, oh, pig. All right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to ask forgiveness. It's my attitude. I may not be 100% responsible for everything, but I'm 100% responsible for whatever my percentage is. Does that make... So if, even if I'm 5% responsible, I'm usually more than 5% responsible, to be honest. But even if I'm only 5% responsible for this relationship problem, I'm 100% responsible for the 5%. Okay? It's maths. So I turned around and I thought, no, I'm going to do this. I look to find him. I find him. He's got a queue of 25 people. all of which are taking communion to him to ask for forgiveness. And I thought, I can't really do this to the poor bloke. In the words of Barack Obama, God loves all people, not white people, all people, not black people, all people, not straight people, all people, not gay people, all people, not American people, all people, not male people, all people, not female people, all people. All people. We need an outbreak of love. Outbreak of love. Amen. I know there's much said around homosexuality at the moment, and I don't want to add to that. But I do want to say we need an outbreak of love. Seriously, an outbreak of love. An outbreak of love. God's grace of River of Grace found me at the age of 15. I was an illegitimate child of a 50-year-old man who had an affair with his a young 22-year-old woman. I didn't know quite what happened to me, actually, in the first few years of my life. I was kind of farmed out, I think, until, actually, 6 years ago, I had to bury my auntie. She passed away, and the story came out that, actually, my auntie, who I'm about to bury, take the service for, she was the woman who brought me up for 3 years. I didn't know that. Bit of a shock, really, the night before the funeral. And then my cousin began to tell me the story. I think because she had passed away, I think he felt as though he could talk about it. And he said, do you know what your nickname was? I said, no, I don't. He said, you were called the bastard child. That was your nickname in the family. Brothers and sisters, God's love family at the age of 15. As soon as he said those words, I knew I was not that. I knew I was a beloved child of God. because God's love has found me and transformed me and changed me. And I've had every healing experience you could have. I've had every counseling session you could have. There's been a whole load of work done on me and a serious amount to go. But God's grace has come, and you can't stop the river. You see, once God's grace come to you, you can't stop it, can you? You've got to let it flow. It's meant to flow through you. So as we take the bread and the wine, God's grace comes to us and we let it flow out. And God's grace comes to us and we let it flow out. And the time, you know, Andy's talking about just trying to have a regular time to with God every day yourselves. That isn't just to tick a box. Brothers and sisters, that is an opportunity for God's grace to come to you. That's all it is. Isn't there, you think as though God's there with a checklist of the things you did wrong yesterday. Turn it around and ask the question, where did I see Jesus yesterday? Where did I sense his love yesterday? I was feeling really down in Starbucks the other day, as you do in Starbucks. I was working, I was having to write, and I really hated it. And this bloke, Starbucks employee, was putting up these stickers on the window in the Trafford Centre, and I don't know, I was trying to write, and I looked for any distraction whatsoever. So I looked at him, I smiled, and I went like this, you see, that's all I did, went like this. I thought he was doing a good job. Okay, and then I had to get back to writing, okay. Then I'm on the phone. I've got a phone call. 15 minutes later, suddenly, and I'm on the phone. This bloke comes and just passes me a coffee. The exact same coffee I had before. He hadn't served me, but he obviously noticed. And he went and walked away. And I tried to find him at the end, and then he'd gone. God's love comes to us, you know, in really surprising ways. God's love to us, through you, to this world, to the people you're serving, to the people that you are trying to love. And some will be hard to love, because actually I'm pretty hard to love. I think we're all pretty hard to love at times, yeah? God's love. Came to a friend of mine who just passed away last week, a lady called Kathy Smedley. She, just an ordinary lady, she was a school teacher. She brought up her great kids and then I took her over to Uganda, and she just got this vision to help kids with AIDS and went back, and her husband's an actor, and they set up this little charity called Act for Africa, doing a fantastic job. And it's grown and grown and grown, this little charity. And she couldn't contain the love, you see. I mean, the stress it brought into their lives, seriously. You know, all the issues of raising money and what's going to happen, all that stuff. She couldn't contain the love, so she let it out. And she literally, through that ministry, have saved thousands of people. When God's love comes to you, you can't contain the love. You can't contain the love. Another friend of ours in our church, she's 60 years of age. She, on the same trip, actually, she got a call to Uganda. I said, Pat, you're 60 years of age. She said, does God retire you? So she went back to serve, and in fact, she told her missionary society, she's called to Uganda. She went to our missionary society, Baptist Missionary Society, and they said, we don't send people to Uganda. She said, I feel called to go to Uganda. And he said, we're never going to do that. Never. In the end, they gave in after she kept applying and badgering them for 2 or 3 years. There are now more missionaries with the Baptist Missionary Society in Uganda than there are all across the world. Because this retired lady, who, to be honest, in our culture doesn't quite fit in. She's slightly odd. Over there, they worship the ground she walks on. They worship the ground. Sister Patricia. They love her to bits. She set up a preventative health care. Stunning stuff she's done. I mean, they are literally, I think the last thing she did, in terms of figures, they had done preventative health care with over 30,000 people in the villages. And if you get the health right, then you get everything else right. Because when you get ill, you have to sell part of your land to pay for the doctor's fees, you see. So if you get ill less, then your land is there, and then you can produce more crops and you get more healthy. Brothers and sisters, somebody whose love came to them and just says, look, pass it out, pass it on. I think God's calling a new generation of people to extreme love. Those who are prepared to put their lives on the line. You are loved by God. Seriously, you are deeply loved by God. Not because you're here. Doesn't matter whether you're here or not. You're loved by God, you see. I mean, it's great. Glad, dead glad you're here, but you are loved by God, regardless of what you do. And even if you don't do anything else the rest of your life, you are still loved by God. God's love has come to you, and it doesn't matter what you have done. And it doesn't matter what gnawing kind of guilt you have hidden away, bring that to the love of God. Bring that to the love of God. Because God's love is great. And as it you receive it, then you show it. We need an outbreak of love in this society. And that's what you guys are doing. Whether you're Eden Projects or MEC or in the prisons ministry or the evangelistic ministry or all the other things. I keep losing track of what else is happening here. Brothers and sisters, you are doing this. Now keep doing it. And do it with each other. Find people to love. Find people to love. So perhaps for communion today, perhaps some of you just want to come forward, and I'm very happy to pray with you if you want some specific prayer. There'll be other people here as well. But for others of you, why don't you just come and take some wine and some bread, or perhaps take some bread, maybe more appropriate, to somebody you just want to show a bit of love to. Not that you've got a problem with, all right? We're not going to have that cue effect happening. But somebody you just want to show a bit of love to. Just say, I appreciate you. I encourage you. We need to have a language of encouragement more and more, don't we? Habit of encouragement. Because I don't know about you, but for every 10 encouragements I hear, it's the one negative that wakes me up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Does that do it to you? Yeah. We need more and more encouragement with each other. I just appreciate it. I just think you're fantastic at that. Can I pray with you?
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check out message.org.uk to find out how you can support or even get involved with one of our teams.